Welcome to the Vitality Radio Podcast, your source for the truth about health, wellness, and real alternatives to drugs, surgeries, and the status quo of healthcare. Here, you'll find information that empowers you to take control of your health. But it's not just about health and wellness. It's about the politics of healthcare and protecting your health freedom. Now, here's your host, Jared St. Clair.
Hello and welcome to Vitality Radio, the podcast where we help you master natural supplements, enhance emotional vitality, and thrive without pharma drugs. Today's episode is going to be a good one. I've already interviewed this gentleman before, and he's actually become a good friend of mine over the years. He is Daryl Bichard from Real Salt and Redmond Clay. Those are probably the two things that you're the most familiar with. But they make some other fantastic products like Relight Electrolytes. They're a Utah company just a couple hours south of where we are here at Vitality. Still owned and operated by the family who started the salt mine in the first place and started collecting clay down there in Redmond, Utah. Two of the most tried and true natural products literally to come from the earth directly that I've ever used and that have been in the industry for years and years and years. They have my very favorite seasonings. They have my very favorite clay, and they have my very favorite electrolyte drink. So we're going to talk about all those things. We're going to talk about the importance of hydration and the various components to that, and we're going to discuss much, much more about these natural minerals from the earth can assist you to optimize your vitality right here on Vitality Radio. Okay, now I'd like to welcome my guest. I tried to get this guy on, maybe it was 6 months ago or something. No, it was longer than that, probably 9 months ago. And he was busy up in Alaska. He lives a very cool life. I can say that because we're friends and I follow him a little bit on Facebook. So I'm going to talk to him a little bit about that stuff too. But this next guest is from one of my very favorite Utah companies. It's a product line that I use extensively myself. And as we get into it, I'll probably rattle off all of the different products that I use from this amazing company. I want to welcome Daryl Bichard to the show. Daryl, welcome to Vitality Radio.
Jared, it is so fun to make this happen. We've been friends for years, going to all of the health food shows from coast to coast, and to be able to be a guest on your show, I'm delighted.
Well, I'm glad to have you for sure. And, you know, when we have had conversations at the shows, when we're not just talking about life, we've definitely talked about the history of your family business that's been around for a long time now. We're going to get into that story. My family business has been around for a long time. And it's just fun for me, and I imagine it's the same for you, to have the opportunity to work with someone who's done this thing, you know, their whole life, and who has that lifelong passion kind of handed down through the generations. I love what we do in this industry, and it's fun to see family businesses succeed and grow and get the word out and get the product out to into the hands of the people that are looking to better their health. So thank you so much for what you and your family have done with, well, I didn't tell anybody who you're from, Redmond Life. So we got Redmond. We're going to talk today about clay. We're going to talk about salt. We're going to talk about electrolytes and all the wonderful things that you produce in Redmond, Utah.
Well, I'm delighted to share part of that story. You know, back in 1958, kind of a story of two brothers, my grandfather and his brother with this little farm in central Utah. And now it's grown to be a really nice, big Utah company. And it's not just my family that's involved anymore. We're still a small private company, but it's neat to see, you know, how far this little business from this little farm town in central Utah has grown, and now people from around the world are familiar with our products.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I'm old enough to remember now when it wasn't that big of a company. I don't know what kind of sales you guys were doing 30, 40 years ago. We've carried Real Salt for as long as I can remember. I don't know if it was one of the first products we had in our store way back in the 70s, but it certainly is close if it wasn't one of the very first. And to have seen what's happened with the brand that was basically salt and clay for the longest time. And now, of course, there's so much more. You've got my very most favorite seasonings. I have literally every one of them in my pantry at home. You know, of course, where the base is generally real salt, right? But also the clay, which I have in my first aid kit and I have in my medicine cabinet. And then right now I've got this drink in my hand, which is Relight, which I use for my electrolytes. So I'm a tried and true believer in the brand and the products you guys produce. But I remember when there wasn't that much like there is now. So it's blossomed incredibly over the last, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 years, I think, is when most of that's happened.
Yeah, you're right. You know, so the story starts in 1958. Actually, a little before that, there's two brothers, my grandpa and his brother. And in World War II, my grandpa was actually a riveter for McDonnell Douglas in California. And then his brother was a miner at Kennecott, the big copper mine here in Utah. So after the war wrapped up, the two brothers wanted to move back to their dad's farm and raise their kids together. And so they moved back and they were farming in central Utah, selling some clay to local farmers for different applications. And then just farming. Well, in 58, there was a pretty bad drought. And they knew there was salt under their farm because just north and just south of the farm, there was this little outcropping of salt that the Native Americans had actually harvested long before the settlers had come through central Utah. So they knew the salt was there. When the farm wasn't doing that well, they needed something to do to keep feeding the kids and, you know, and keep the farm afloat. And so with my grandpa's business experience with McDonnell Douglas and his brother's mining experience at Kennecott, they got a loan and bought a bulldozer and some shovels and some picks and some dynamite and started mining salt there right on their farm, initially selling it for farmers because every animal needs salt, as you know, and then started selling salt to the state of Utah and the counties to put on the roads to keep the roads clean and safe here in Utah in the wintertime. And then in the 1970s, when the health food movement started to gain momentum, there was a nutritionist from California that came through and got a tour probably of the Grand Canyon and the salt mine and a few things, and went back and wrote an article and published this article to all these health food stores saying that the healthiest, tastiest salt in the world was from this little deposit in central Utah. And so we had stores, probably like your family store in this 1970s, calling us and saying, hey, we want to sell your salt in our health food store. And we didn't really have a package for health food stores. We sold it in chunks for cows and sheep and sold it in big truckloads for the roads. And so the family sat around and said, what do we call this stuff? We've got to put it in a jar and sell it to these health food stores that are asking. And they said, well, it's not fake salt. It's not processed salt. It's not white salt. It's, I don't know, it's just real salt. And that's how the brand was born. And then since then, yeah, the health food movement really moved the natural product side of our business forward.
Wow. Yeah, that's a great story. I think I've heard that before, but it's been a long time. There were a couple of nuggets in there that I thought were really interesting, especially the, you know, just kind of the serendipity of it where all of a sudden somebody, you know, exposes you for who you really are, right? The people that make real salt. And let's give it to actual humans, not just animals anymore. And certainly don't waste real salt on the roads. I mean, my goodness. But
well, it's kind of funny. You know, there's that saying, you can't see the forest through the trees, or you don't really. And back then, you know, the family was using it on our tables. I mean, everybody used it because it was there and it was available, but it was kind of seen as an inferior product because it has all this color in it and these minerals. You know, if the first time, if growing up, all you'd ever seen was white flour, the first time you saw really freshly ground wheat flour, you might think it's inferior because it looks dirty. Like freshly ground wheat doesn't look like the processed stark white bleached flour that you'd have in the store. And so at the time, my family thought, wow, you know, we've got this salt, you know, the cows love it and the animals love it and we think it tastes good, but it's obviously an inferior product because it's not this highly processed you know, sugar, flour, you know, that people were just used to eating post, you know, World War II.
Yeah, it's weird. When you grow up in a health food family like I did, I never had salt that wasn't a whole food salt. We had real salt. We had kind of a unique, back in the old days, I'd say a different type of sea salt than what we see now that was, you know, not as processed. We had that type of stuff growing up, and I always loved the taste of real salt. I thought it was fantastic. And we would go to restaurants. I'll always remember this as a young man. We'd go to a restaurant and they'd have this white table salt on their table. And I'd sprinkle it on my food. And I would immediately say, "Gal, this salt just doesn't taste good. I don't like this stuff. I like real salt." And now to this day, we have, you've done a big service to people like me by putting these little tiny pocket bottles of real salt together, these little glass bottles that you can carry around in your pocket or your handbag or whatever. There we go. And I don't leave home without it. My wife and I both always have one with us. We have one in the car. We always put one in our suitcase. And we refuse to use any other salt when we're traveling because why would we? It's the best salt. And it's not just, it's funny because if it wasn't a more nutritious salt, which we'll talk about why that is in just a second, it just plain tastes so much better. I don't know. Just sodium on its own isn't the same thing.
Well, the two are quite related. You know, one of the questions I always hear, or not as often anymore, but isn't salt bad for me? You know, I've heard that I should eat less salt. My doctor says, hey, I should eat less salt. However, the first thing that's going to happen if you and I went to the hospital today, we're going to get an IV of saline solution. Mm-hmm. In fact, an IV of anything but saline would be disastrous. You know, we can't have an IV of distilled water. The cells would start to immediately rupture. We can't have an IV of tap water. We can't have an IV of coffee or worse, soda. I mean, those our bodies are saline solution in motion. Our tears are salt, our sweat is salt, our urine is salt, and anything that we do, we are losing salts. The definition of salts is an electrolyte, something that actually conducts electricity. Distilled water, as you know in that little demonstration we sometimes do at the shows, is a poor conductor of electricity. And so if you are drinking gallons and gallons of water because you hear, hey, I need to stay hydrated, you don't urinate distilled water. You don't cry distilled water. So no matter how much water you drink, your urine, your sweat, your tears, your body fluid is salt, and you are losing salt every day. I mean, if we were to wipe the sweat off our brow, it's going to taste salty because our bodies are just going through so much salt. Now, in a lot of people's diets, because salt's a bad or a very cheap preservative, there's a lot of foods that are very nutrient poor that have copious amounts of processed salt on them, which is very different from a good, healthy, clean food that has very natural, clean salt. Because if somebody's eating out of boxes and cans and processed foods, yeah, you're getting probably more salt in a bad form than you need. If you start eating fresh, making your own food, you actually have to go out of your way to find and add good clean salt to your diet. And because of that, if you look at any religious text, salt was always seen as one of the most important things in all human history. In fact, the Roman soldiers were paid a salary or a wage in salt. And the term "is a man worth his salt" that sometimes you hear is because if you were getting paid salt and you weren't working hard enough to earn your keep, you weren't worth the rations you're given. If we use a military example, the man wasn't worth his salt because he was getting paid salt. He wasn't worth the salt that he was earning because that was his wage. Because back in the spice trade, because salt kept everything alive, so it was the universal currency. You know, if we didn't have a refrigerator, everything that we ate outside of season would have had to have been preserved with salt. Kimchi, sauerkraut, fermented veggies, meats, all of those are just essential to keep humanity alive. And so there's actually been three things that happened that made salt get this bad rap. The first one was a couple of bad studies back in the 1900s, latest one in the 1950s, where they took copious amounts of processed salt, injected them into mice, and the mice struggled. But this is processed salt in super high amounts directly injected, which isn't, it's not how you take salt. Right. So that's the first problem, was the study was a little flawed. But the second, there's two processes that a salt manufacturer might choose to do with salt that takes salt from this life-giving source that's in every IV solution in the world to something that is this white poison, essentially, that you probably should eat less of. And so those two factors, if we're okay, we'll jump into those two things.
Yeah, please.
So the first thing is salt in nature is hygroscopic, meaning it, well, let me start with the other one first. So salt in the ocean occurs as a complex chloride. In the ocean, we have sodium chloride, but potassium, calcium, magnesium, selenium, phosphorus, copper, zinc, iodine, which is why seaweed, things like dulse and kelp are high in iodine, is because they're from the ocean. Mm-hmm. So salt companies around the turn of the century realized that they could take the seawater, and instead of letting all that seawater that's rich in minerals settle off together in one unique solution, they found a process that they could take the seawater from the San Francisco Bay, for instance, they could pull it into a pond, use a different liner, and they could leach off the potassium chloride. Then they can move the salt to the next pond with a different membrane and pull off the calcium chloride, then the magnesium chloride. So through a series of evaporation ponds, salt companies can take this complex chloride that's beautiful and natural in nature and can leach off different chlorides. And then when they're done, they can sell the leftovers as salt. You know, similar, if you and I lived in Florida and we had this beautiful orchard of oranges and citrus fruit, and we know that one of the benefits of citrus is the vitamin C complex, because it helps in so many things. And if you and I created this new process, we could take this beautiful grapefruit and we could mysteriously extract out the whole vitamin C complex and put it in a vitamin and sell it to somebody else. And then we could take that leftover grapefruit and put it in the grocery store and still sell it as a grapefruit. Boy, you and I are geniuses and probably going to get rich pretty quick. But the question is, should we do that? And I would propose probably not. And with salt companies, they can do that. We can take, as a salt company, we could take the water out of the Great Salt Lake here in Utah, which isn't very clean. But we could take the Great Salt Lake and we could use a membrane that processed through electrolysis and pull out metal magnesium from the magnesium chloride that occurs in the Great Salt Lake. And that's exactly what they do at the Great Salt Lake, in fact. Magnesium is one of the higher valued products that comes off the Great Salt Lake. Mm-hmm. Because they can use electrolysis to leach off that magnesium and then turn it into metal magnesium and supplements. So salt company, that's problem number one, is many salts on the market today, if you went into a typical grocery store and looked at all the salts on the shelf, if it looks like it's beady and perfectly stark white, chances are that salt has been demineralized to at least some level. Now, they're not going to pull out all the super trace elements. It's not worth it to do that. But the potassium, which is really important for the sodium potassium pump in our bodies, mm-hmm. the magnesium, super essential that a lot of people don't get enough of, the calcium, not as important as the other two because we get a lot of sources of calcium in our diet, but those key electrolytes are often leached out of many processed salts today. That's problem number one. Problem number two is salt is hygroscopic. Now, we don't see that a lot in Utah because our air is so dry here. But if I were to take this salt crystal and we were to go down to Florida on a really humid day and put this salt crystal out on the kitchen table, it's actually going to suck water out of the air. And we're going to end up with a pool of water under this salt crystal because salt is that hygroscopic. And it's important, because salt's job in the body is to, one of the main jobs, is to regulate the intracellular and the extracellular fluids. That's salt's job, one of the main jobs. And it makes sense that salt then has this ability to be hygroscopic and interact with moisture. The challenge with that, around the turn of the century, salt companies started to look at salt. And if you've ever had a shaker of salt in a humid environment, because it's hygroscopic, it sucks water out of the air, then your salt shaker starts to clump and the salt kind of gets sticky at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Now, option one is to, you know, kind of use your palm and shake up that salt, and those clumps will break right up. But salt companies said, what chemicals could we take and coat the whole crystal with to stop this salt's ability to interact with moisture? Again, they never asked, should we do that? Or what what implications would this have?
Mm-hmm.
But the thought was, when it's raining outside and it's super humid and we don't want the salt to absorb moisture, what can we cover that crystal with to stop its ability to do that? And they came up with a whole list of chemicals, things like yellow prussiate of soda, which is sodium ferrocyanide. Sodium silicoaluminate is another one, very similar to the aluminum that's linked in antiperspirants. There's another one called propylene glycol 400. Propylene glycol, that's antifreeze, and it's not exactly mm-hmm. like propylene glycol 400 that they coat salt crystals with, but any of these are things that you probably don't want to be putting on your eggs or your chips or whatever it is you're making every day. And little amounts aren't going to be that problematic, which is why it's approved as a food additive. But if you started looking at the labels on salt, those two things, finding out, are they taking anything out of it? Are they, you know, leaching off any of those other key electrolytes? And are they adding anything to stop salt's ability to interact with moisture? Those are the two big reasons. And then taking this highly processed, chemicalized version of salt and then putting copious amounts on foods that you shouldn't really even call food. And we wonder why now we're feeling sick and we're feeling bloated and we've got water retention and blood pressure. It's not – before the turn of the century, all of us would have eaten more salt if we didn't have a refrigerator, because we would have had to have eaten salt to preserve all of our food outside of season.
Mm-hmm.
And yet now that we have all this processed food, it's similar to how fats got a really bad rap for a long time. And everybody thought all fat was bad, and it turned out that the low-fat diet was actually pretty problematic because we need the right kind of fat. Now, we should avoid the wrong kind of fat, and salt's the same way. If salt's in its natural state on natural foods, you'd have a really tough time overdosing on salt. And if you were just eating avocados and good, clean, you know, animal fats, you'd have a tougher time overdosing on fat. But if you have highly processed, you know, fats on foods that you shouldn't be eating, then we start having problems. And salt, in some ways, is a similar discussion.
Yeah, well, and I would echo everything you said. And I get people that come in all the time that are concerned about that, saying, hey, I'm supposed to be on a low-salt diet. I've got high blood pressure, that kind of thing. And I'll the first thing I'll ask them is, what kind of salt do they use? And basically have this discussion with them and say, you know, one change you should make, or at least consider making, is just changing to a real salt that has all of the minerals in there and the other electrolytes. These minerals were not meant to be taken in isolation. You don't ever see them isolated. There's no salt mine in America or in the world that's just sodium chloride, right? And or magnesium or calcium. They're always found together. And seems logical that there's a reason for that. So when we start isolating them and for lack of a better term, playing God with our food, we end up getting ourselves into some trouble. So let's talk a little bit about the other forms of salt out there that people have heard of, things like Celtic salt, Himalayan pink salt. Especially recently, Celtic salt's gotten a lot of publicity. I think somebody did something that went crazy on TikTok with that. What constitutes, as a guy who's been in the salt business his whole life, what constitutes a good salt versus a salt that maybe we should avoid?
I love that question. And when we talk about that, two things. One, just one caveat to everybody should eat more salt discussion is, if you have healthy kidneys, if you're not on dialysis, you're not in kidney failure, our bodies can process about 4 ounces of salt a day. That's per Dr. David Brownstein, who I'm sure you're familiar with some of his work, the Salt Your Way to Health book and another. So now if any of the listeners today have kidney failure or they're on dialysis, ignore everything that I've said before or I'll say after, because healthy kidneys can process an amazing amount of salt. That's their job. But if you're on kidney failure, then very different discussion. You've got to take care of your body very differently. So with that, when we say salt in this discussion today, we're talking about culinary salt, which would be sodium and chloride primarily with these other trace elements that are added to it. In chemistry, sometimes I'll talk about salt. And if you're a chemist, a salt is a acid and a base that are bound together in an ionic bond. So one question would be like magnesium sulfate, Epsom salt is a salt, but that's not really what we're talking about today. So in this discussion, as far as a culinary salt, I think there's three questions that you can ask. And if you ask these three questions, you will find a great salt. Now, obviously, I'm a little biased, and I think the Redmond and the Real Salt is some of the best salt in the world. But I also have some good friends that are also in the salt industry that I think have great products. One of those is Celtic, who you mentioned. The owner is Selena DeLange, super nice lady, has a great product line. And I think if you ask these three questions, you might end up with Redmond Real Salt, you might end up with Celtic or one of the Himalayan brands, or you might end up with a brand from Bolivia. So the three questions, I'll tell you in just one second, but first, the way salt is created. So all salt today, all food salt, comes from an ocean or a seabed at some point. And there's some scientific reasons for that, but in the oceans have this salt that our bodies need. So option one, if we lived, you know, a few thousand years ago, we could have gone down to the ocean. We could have taken a big pan of seawater and brought it back and just sat it in the sun. And that seawater today is about 2 to 3% sodium and chloride. So as we bring that pot of seawater in, we start evaporating the water off the top. Pretty soon that goes from 3% salt to 4 to 5 to 6. At 26%, salt and water is at max salinity. We call that a sole solution, where it's the water cannot hold any more salt. And so once we lose another percentage of salt, of water, then the salt will start to fall out of suspension onto the bottom of that jar. And so we do that, and we could end up with a pan. Start with several gallons, and we'll get a couple of cups of salt when we're done, because we're dissolving all of that out. And our early ancestors would have done that. They could have brought a pot back, they could have boiled it over the fire, or if they lived near the ocean, they could have just pulled some salt water off into a pond and let it just evaporate there naturally. When you do that, you get the full column of minerals, because you're not moving it into different membranes. Or our options, we could have watched the animals, like if we lived here in Utah, the animals would have been pawing at the soil, and they would have, the animals actually would have found this salt bed in Utah long before the settlers came through, and long before the Native Americans had harvested it. Even before that, it was the animals that discovered it, because animals need salt to live. And so we could have taken a pick and a shovel and broken off a couple of pieces of this salt and brought it back, and then we can get salt that way. So those are the two primary ways you can get salt: from a current ocean, the Gulf of Mexico, San Francisco Bay, the Mediterranean, Brittany, France, Hawaii, or from an ancient seabed that was laid down prehistorically and then buried into the earth. And so because of that, there's these three questions. So the first question is, who's producing it? Today, a lot of salt gets commingled and mixed. And if you walked into a grocery store and there's 15 different brands, really, you know, knowing who's producing it is very difficult, because it's oftentimes some of these big salt areas, they will just kick all this salt to the open market. They ship it across in containers, and then it's sold to 30 different suppliers, and they all put it in shakers, ends up in your stores, and you don't really know. So if you can know who's producing it, then you can ask the second question, is what's the source? You know, is it coming from a current ocean? Is it coming from an ancient seabed? And there's pluses and minuses, maybe of both of those. But if I was getting my salt from the Gulf of Mexico during the BP oil spill, I would probably want to find a different source. And so knowing where that source is, I think is pretty important. There's some beautiful salt in Japan and in Asia, but probably not during the meltdown of the nuclear facility. And so being able to know who's producing it, then we can ask what's the source. Then the third question is, what are they doing to it? In salt, it really matters. Are they taking anything out, like we had talked before, or are they putting anything in? And if you ask those three questions, who's producing it, what's the source, and what are they doing to it, you might end up purchasing the Celtic from Selena DeLink. Great product. You might end up buying this really pretty Bolivian pink salt that comes from Bolivia, very similar. And if I lived in Bolivia, I would certainly buy that before I, you know, shipped salt from Utah all the way there. Or you might end up with Redmond Real Salt, which I think is one of the best salts in the world. But we don't have a corner on great salt. And so I think those three questions, you know, and I would guess when you have customers that walk into your store and maybe there's three or four different supplement choices or three or four different, you know, quality honeys or quality salts, and maybe the answer is different for different people, which I think is great as well. But I think if you ask those questions, who's producing it, what's the source, what are they doing to it, whether you're buying steak or you're buying eggs or you're buying salt or you're buying quinoa, I think you're going to get a much better product with those three questions.
Yeah, I love that. That's actually a really good tip for people that are trying to figure this out, you know, shopping in their local store. So that, I think that covers salt really well. You started to touch on electrolytes, and I am of the opinion, and I'm curious if you've, I know you must get a million questions about electrolytes, but there seems to be a little bit of a disconnect with some people in terms of really understanding what electrolytes are specifically, why they're so important versus maybe just trace minerals generally. So I want to touch on that. And then also, what is there has been a big, I'll say, resurgence in interest in electrolytes lately. I mean, so many more people coming into Vitality and saying, hey, show me where your electrolytes are. I used to have to talk to people about electrolytes and explain why they might want them. Now I've got people coming to me asking me, you know, what my best electrolytes are. So let's talk about electrolytes generally, what they do in the body. You mentioned the sodium potassium pump. I definitely want to hit on that as well.
Yeah. So elements, all minerals are, you have some minerals that are compounds. You have some, you know, let's say sodium, you know, sodium and chloride, I think are two beautiful parts of chemistry, because sodium, it doesn't occur pure in its pure form in nature. And if we had a block of sodium and I were to pour one drop of water on it, I'm gone. I am pulverized. Pure water and pure sodium, super explosive. If this was pure chlorine, equally problematic, because chlorine is a super deadly acidic gas. It was used in the death camps. You got to be careful if you have a swimming pool. Chlorine is mean stuff. But if you have one sodium mixed with one chloride, then we have this beautiful life-giving substance that our bodies need. And the body, through electrolysis, actually breaks that apart. The sodium is used in the sodium potassium pump. The chloride is used for many reasons, one of those making hydrochloric acid so we could digest our food. And so when it comes to the idea of electrolytes, our bodies, our intracellular and extracellular fluids, are rich in these minerals that will conduct electricity. Our bodies are electricity. Outside of a spiritual discussion, you know, if you and I are alive one moment and then we're both dead on the ground the next moment, outside of a spiritual discussion, the only difference is the absence of an electric current, because our hand moves because an electric current will pulse through. My thoughts are electric. And so if we were to die or fall over and we went into fibrillation and our heart starts to flutter and the electric current's all messed up, the EMTs will come in, they'll grab the paddles and they will hit us with the paddles to reestablish that electric current. And electrolytes are essential for that. And so, years ago, people knew that electrolytes were important. So if you had surgery, they might tell you to go drink some Pedialyte or Rysolite. Or if you went in and looked at a bag of saline solution, the standard bag of saline is something called standard saline, which is 0.9% sodium and chloride. But if you looked at some of the other standard bags, it's called lactated ringers. And lactated ringers is a bag of saline that has sodium and chloride, but also potassium, also magnesium. And if you look at the intracellular fluids, we have fluid inside the cell, we have fluid outside the cell, and then we have brain fluid. And those three different fluids have different ratios of sodium, potassium, calcium, magnesium. And those are the big electrolytes, sodium, potassium, calcium, magnesium, and chloride. So those are the big ones. And of those, inside the cell, I'm looking at my cheat sheet here, but your extracellular fluids are going to be mostly sodium chloride with less potassium and less calcium and less magnesium. And then intracellular fluids, you actually, that ratio swaps and you have more potassium and less sodium. And so inside and outside the cell, you're always bringing in sodium and potassium, flushing those cells, flushing the cells. And so anytime we, you know, urinate, we cry, we sweat, we are burning through those essential electrolytes. Now, years ago, there was a product. It was designed to aid the football team, the Florida Gators, because the Gators are out there running in the hot Florida sun. They're running, they're sweating, they're cramping up, they're getting nauseous. Oftentimes, irritability is the first sign of dehydration, not lack of water, but dehydration. Those are very different things, because you can be drinking gallons of water and still die from dehydration, because you're just flushing those electrolytes. So as people are starting to eat more healthy, and we're seeing that, as people are eating more healthy, they've got to go out and find good electrolytes, because they're not getting all that processed salt and processed foods that they used to get. And I think that's one of the big reasons that people are seeing this resurgence or importance in electrolytes. Now, if we went back, you know, a few thousand years ago, geologists and scientists would say that we ate more foods rich in potassium and magnesium. You know, we don't eat as many nuts and berries that maybe our ancestors did. And so we're not getting as many of those two primarily. So when it comes to electrolytes, you know, you could go to the hospital and you could get an injection of saline solution. They might charge you $500 for that little bag of saline in the hospital. Or you could actually take a little bit of water, add some, you know, salt crystals to it, and you've made your own electrolyte drink, because an electrolyte drink is something that conducts electricity. So I think as people are wanting to get away from some of those processed sports drinks, and they've realized that all the sugar and the food coloring and the flavors in those sports drinks aren't good. Yes, you do need to replace the electrolytes, but there's a better way to do that. I think that's this resurgence. And I was actually really impressed last week. I saw this new Gatorade that's actually what it probably should have been when it was first created. You know, it's actually a good product.
Really?
It's surprising, right? But there's no sugars, there's no flavors. It's just water and electrolytes, which I think it's interesting that even the big corporate companies are realizing that people want good, clean, natural products now.
Yeah, I think the word has finally gotten out that Gatorade and Powerade and those things are not all they're cracked up to be, and a lot more sugar and colors and flavors than they are electrolytes. Well, that's actually really interesting. So if I love that you focus so much on electricity there. You know, the electrolyte word itself is clearly, electrical in nature, right? But when we think about some of the most common concerns that people have nowadays, heart disease is a big deal. And in order to have a properly functioning heart with a proper heart rhythm and everything else, that electrolyte balance is really, really crucial. As you said, if the heart stops, they charge it back up just like you jump a battery on a car, right, to get that electricity flowing again. We also hear a lot about brain fog and concerns about, cellular communication are huge when it comes to how the brain works. So if we have our electrolyte balance there, our brain is more likely to function optimally because messages can be sent and received more efficiently than they otherwise could. So I love that. I want to ask this question because I'm curious in terms of formulation, and I don't know how much you had to do with this versus other people at the company, but a few years back, and I don't know when the first year was that Relight was born, but Relight, I've got it in my drink right here. It's my daily go-to every morning. I get my Relight in. You came up with, at least based on what I've been able to tell, one of the most electrolyte-dense electrolyte supplements on the market. There are many, many products that call themselves electrolytes, but most of them don't have nearly the quantity of sodium, potassium, magnesium, calcium as yours does. What was the thought process behind coming out with something so potent?
Yeah, good question. So the first thing is there's a lot of electrolytes on the market that still function with this idea that salt's bad. And so they'll try to maximize calcium, potassium, magnesium, and they'll try to minimize the sodium and the chloride. Mm-hmm. And so that, to me, is a little misleading or maybe a little short-sighted because, yes, processed sodium is bad and high amounts of processed sodium on processed food is bad, but our bodies are saline-based. So our bodies are sodium and chloride-based, not potassium chloride-based. And so the fear that sodium is bad has led some electrolytes to be designed minimizing the sodium, which is unfortunate. And I guess if you were eating out of boxes and cans, maybe that's okay. But if you're eating a natural diet, you should not be scared of sodium. In fact, you'd have a tough time overdosing on sodium chloride if it's in its natural state, much like you can overdose on beta carotene tablets, you'd have a tougher time overdosing on carrots.
Right.
And so that would be the first thing. The second thing is we consulted with some of our good friends in the industry across the health side, as well as the sports and nutrition side. So there's a guy, he wrote a book called The Salt Fix. His Dr. James D. Nicolantonio. Excellent book. And so when we were designing the formula, we knew we didn't want to minimize the sodium and chloride or the other trace minerals that we have. But to, how much potassium versus magnesium was a collaboration with Dr. James D. Nicolantonio, as well as some other, sports medicine and sports scientists. And that's where that collaboration came from with that formula. So ours, yeah, you will see versus some of the other ones that are pretty typical on the market, you will see that ours does have more of those other electrolytes.
Yeah, definitely. And you can taste it, right? It's kind of a salty drink. Frankly, to some people, takes a little bit of getting used to. But boy, I'll tell you, I've never had an electrolyte supplement that people were more jazzed about. It's wild how many people come in to my shop and see Relight on the shelf, not knowing that we carried it before, and get all excited. Oh my gosh, I can get Relight here. I love Relight. And just tell me how much they love the stuff. And it was actually a customer that got me to try it for the first time, telling me, you've got to try this stuff. It's amazing. And I drink it every day now.
And one of the things that we've heard, I think, is people are getting more in tune that the problems with soda or pop or whatever you call it with the sugar and all of those problems with soda. I think one of the reasons that electrolyte drinks are having this reoccurrence is because people are used to wanting something that has good flavor, it tastes good, but they can avoid that, all of that processed sugar in the diet sodas and all of the refined sugars in the regular sodas. And so there's actually a couple of those, here in Utah, there's these soda shops all over, right? About every corner, there's one of these, soda shops where you can stop in, instead of getting a coffee, you can buy soda all day long in, big old things. And there's a couple of these soda shops now that actually carry Relight as an alternative. And so you can go to the soda shop and instead of getting a soda, you actually can get a Relight where they'll take some, soda water and put some Relight powder in there and make you a drink. So you go with your friends and they can buy their diet soda, their big soda, and you can get a Relight. And I think that's pretty cool.
That's hilarious. I had no idea. I'm constantly telling people to stay so far away from those places. I've never been to one myself, but I may have to check that out. That's wild.
Well, I would call before to make sure they have relight before you go, because there is a lot. Can you imagine the volume of sugar? I mean, if you were to put that, it'd just be so interesting. Like if they said, hey, this is the amount of sugar we gave away yesterday in our drinks at one of these popular places, that'd mm-hmm. be a scary amount of sugar that every one of those are distributing.
Not to mention artificial colors and artificial sweeteners, right? I mean, it'd just be a disturbing. Yes, indeed. And then what I think is so funny about those places, total rant here, is that they not only sell the soda, but they also, most of them, sell sugar cookies to go with the soda. And it's like, okay, maybe this isn't a good idea for us. So we're running low on time here, and I don't want to short this next topic. You mentioned clay. What I'd like to do, if it's okay with you, Daryl, is let's hit Redmond clay for about 10-12 minutes. If we don't get as much information out as we want, I may have to beg you to come back on again for 20 minutes and do a little bit more of a great episode on clay. But you started out, even before you were mining salt and selling salt, you were using the clay. Tell us about Redmond clay.
So if you said, Jared, you have to pick. You either have to, you can have real salt or you can have Redmond clay, but you can't have both. You've got to decide once and forever. I would actually choose clay, because there are some other good brands of salt. If real salt was not available at Vitality Nutrition tomorrow, your customers could walk in and they would be okay. They would be a good salt. Maybe, in my opinion, it wouldn't taste quite as good and it wouldn't be the fun Utah story, but they would have a great product. Clay, I think, is because of its so uniqueness, if I had to pick one or the other, I would actually pick clay. So if we went from the earliest records of man, clay has been talked about for healing since the earliest tablets that we have in humanity. There's stories from across the country, across the world, and all of these cultures using clay for healing. It's mentioned in religious texts. It's mentioned the Persians, the Romans, the Greeks, when the early European settlers came over to the U.S. in the 1500s. Sir Thomas Harriot wrote a letter back to Europe and said that the clay that the Native Americans were using here in America was as good, if not better, than the clay they were using for dysentery and for infected wounds from the island of Lemnos in Europe. And so clay has always been used by man. And the reason for that, when an elephant gets hurt, an elephant doesn't run to the vet. An elephant runs to the mud and rolls in the mud. And that mud, as it dries, it draws thorns, it draws thistles. And so topically, clay increases local circulation and draws out impurities, which is why every diva since Cleopatra has used clay on their face. Because when clay dries, it can lift out impurities, cleans the pores, tones the skin, brings a little local circulation, which are all great things for healing. If you've ever watched late night television and watched Nova, you've probably seen these macaws in South America that live off clay and toxic berries. These parrots will go and eat these toxic berries. The husk is super alkaline and they can't digest it. It's actually pretty toxic. They'll eat these berries and they fly over and eat a bunch of clay because it neutralizes all of the chemicals. Birds of prey will do the same. In fact, the best bird sanctuaries here in America right now that are revitalizing California condors and the bald eagles that have eaten something and have gotten sick, they actually feed them clay. If we were tilapia farming, and whether we should or shouldn't be, that's a different question, but if we were, we actually could feed the tilapia clay and it removes the lead, the mercury, and the cadmium from the tilapia. If we were pig farmers will feed their pigs clay because it reduces the levels of mercury and cadmium in the bones and the brains and the tissue of the pigs. And so science has used clay internally and externally since the dawn of time. And there's amazing science around that. Now, we don't sell our clay for an internal clay for human consumption. We actually sell clay for farmers, and so farmers will use clay as part of their feed as a toxin binder because they get better calf ratios, and they get less bacteria in the milk, and they get less vet bills when they're feeding clay to their animals. We don't sell it that way right now for our human side. We just sell it topically. And you'll hear all kinds of amazing stories on clay. The most common is a poultice. And so you'll have, you know, spas from around the world will use clay. You know, your grandma and my grandma, if you got stung by a bee, they'd tell you to go put some mud on it. And the right type of mud will draw and pull topically. So I know that's just a real quick overview on clay. If you're intrigued and would like to see more, and there's, if you go to Wikipedia, which I'm, you know, it's kind of truth by committee, so there's some problems with it. But but if you went to Wikipedia and searched medical clay, it's actually a pretty good Wikipedia page. NASA, you know, back in the 1960s, NASA took clay to space with them because of when they did this study on mice, NASA did, and they found that when these mice ate clay as part of their daily rations, their bone density and their calcium absorption shot way up. And so in the space program, if you're living in space and you don't have gravity working against us, every day we're not getting that weight training. And so bone density becomes a big problem for astronauts. And so in the 1960s, they did this study and they took clay to space with them to increase bone density. And so there's a lot of fun stuff. And that article is published on that Wikipedia page. One of the best researchers of our time on clay is Dr. Linda Williams. And Dr. Linda Williams has done a lot of research on clay for flesh-eating bacterias and flesh-eating bacteria caused ulcers. And it's just some really fascinating research on clay that there's not a contraindication. Clay can't go wrong. In fact, if we went to the war zones today, the primary blood stop for the U.S. military and many other militaries is actually clay. They take bentonite clay and kaolin clay and mix it together, and there's a product called Cool Clod, and it is clay based because of the way the clay is it's a great lattice for rebuilding skin and increasing collagen fibers. It also is a great coagulant, and it increases local circulation while binding to bacteria. And so clay, the research on clay, there's a lot still to be done, but it is a pretty amazing product. So we sell it for facials. We also use it as a base in our toothpaste line. We have a toothpaste called Earth Paste, and it has salt and it has clay. The clay is very alkaline, so it decreases the acidity in the mouth. It's also mineral rich and a great polisher. And so it's clay is the right kind of clay. There's 7 different classes of clay. The type of clay that we have here is a bentonite montmorillonite clay. That term can be kind of confusing. Some people have heard, oh, bentonite or montmorillonite. As a quick aside, there was a guy in Fort Benton, Wyoming, and he's walking across Fort Benton, Wyoming. He comes across this outcropping of clay that the Native Americans there were using topically and internally, and said, what do I call this stuff? I'm here at Fort Benton, Wyoming. I'm going to call it bentonite. Little did he know there was a guy in Montmorillon, France, 100 years before that, walking along Montmorillon, France, came across this outcropping of clay that all the locals were using since the early days of Brittany, France, for the military, for the cosmetics, for internal, external uses, and said, man, this is a new mineral. I need to come up with a name of this new mineral. What should I call it? I'm at Montmorillon, France. I'm going to call it Montmorillonite. And so it's actually the same mineral. This type of mineral is volcanic ash that's weathered over eons. And so every deposit of bentonite or montmorillonite is a little different based on the volcano that created this ash that then weathered over thousands of years. And so every bentonite's a little different. And just like I tell people, hey, if you've tried clay in the past and it didn't work for some reason, don't give up on clay. Just find a different source. And just like, you know, if you tried one sea salt as a kid that you didn't like, don't give up on natural salt. That sea salt might have been highly processed or harvested from some place weird. So the beauty of clay is it's cheap. It's found all around the world. And I was invited a few years ago to speak at the University of Pennsylvania's medical school to show them why and to help them see why clay is working so well. In the Amish community there in Pennsylvania, a lot of them are a little hesitant to use Western medicine. Mm-hmm. And so they typically won't go see medical help until it's way past when any of them should. But oftentimes when they would come in, they would talk about how they wanted to use clay as part of the treatment. And so the University of Pennsylvania invited me in to help explain why this clay was working so well among the Amish community.
Interesting.
So and it's kind of fun. Like every history book talks about it. Every religious text or stories in the Bible about, you know, taking clay and spitting on it and making a paste and making a poultice. And every text, and I'm not trying to downplay or upplay any of that, but since the dawn of time, our ancestors have used clay. And if you went to the war zone today, they're also using clay. So clay doesn't need to be this weird thing any more than salt should be this weird thing. It's part of who we are and has been part of civilization as long as there's been civilization.
I love it. And yeah, we could definitely get into more on clay, and we may have to do that another time. One way or the other, for you listening, if I can get Daryl back to do clay down the road with his busy schedule, I will. Otherwise, we'll put together a great show on clay for you, because I'm fascinated by it. And frankly, I've used it. I've used it quite a bit through my life, but not nearly to the extent that I probably could have used it. I want to learn more about it myself. It's incredible stuff. So what we've covered here today, I think, has been as good as we can in the 55 minutes we've spoken so far, Daryl. We've talked relight. We've talked electrolytes generally. We've talked salt and real salt and even Celtic salt, Himalayan salt, things like that. And, of course, we've talked about the Redmond clay. Before I let you go, is there anything else you want to leave my listeners with?
You know, I just have really enjoyed the conversation, Jared. I appreciate you having me on. Something that I'm always working on is trying to just be a little more intentional. I think as a human race, you know, if we could try to live each of our days a little more intentionally, you know, including where we shop and why we shop and what foods we bring home with us. It's something that I have been thinking a lot about lately, is trying to be a little more intentional with what I eat and where I shop and what I spend my time doing. And so anyway, I really appreciate the friendship, Jared, and appreciate you having me on.
Well, it's great to have you, and your knowledge on these topics is deep. We could definitely speak for many more hours, but I agree with what you're saying. If we think a little bit more before we act and act with intention, we'll all be better off. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up the show. I'm going to say goodbye to you, Daryl. Thank you so much. And for everybody listening, I hope this has been a valuable episode for you. We'll have links in the show notes and show description on your podcast app for all the things that we've talked about. I'll even link to the Wikipedia page and some of these other references that Daryl has mentioned. So check those out. If you have questions, call us 801-292-6662 or jump on our website at vitalitynutrition.com. Thank you so much for listening to me. I'm Jared St. Clair, and this has been Vitality Radio.
You've been listening to the Vitality Radio podcast. Enjoy your week. In the meantime, Jared will be feverishly searching for the latest nutrition info to educate you on and wading into mounds of propaganda to help steer you through it. Vitality Radio is researched and written by Jared St. Clair. Our awesome music is by Brian Bob Young. Support Vitality Radio by subscribing and giving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or your favorite podcast source. Don't forget to follow us at Vitality Radio on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Please let us know your thoughts about this episode by using the hashtag Vitality Radio Podcast. And if you like what you hear, go tell somebody with a share, a screenshot, or an airdrop. Thank you.